I'll tell you a little rock and roll radio story. A long, long, long time ago, before I got into talk radio, I was a baby DJ, and it must have been 1978 or 1979 when I actually got promoted from disc jockey to being the music director of a radio station. And what that meant was that the new records would come in, and I would put them on the turntable in my office. Yes, the old days of vinyl. And listen to them and help decide whether the radio station was going to play this song or not play that song. And one day I put a record on the turntable and it sounded like this. My first reaction was, well, this is completely unlike everything I've ever heard. The song was called Rock Lobster, and it sounded kind of like punk surf music to me. Well, I was working in an area where there were lots of beaches, and surf music was actually fairly popular. And as I listened to the song all the way through, and it got kind of bizarre towards the middle, I thought, we should put this on the air. And so the next day we added it to our playlist. It was by this group I'd never heard of called the B-52s. And the response from the audience was immediately positive. And so that was more than 30 years ago. And ever since then, I've been aware every once in a while of the B-52s popping up with another song here and there. And for a while, there were no B-52s. And then they were back. And they are still around, and so is that man with that kind of odd singing voice, if he doesn't mind my saying it. His name is Fred Schneider, and he's here in the studio with us today. Welcome to St. Louis, Fred.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How hard was it to get the B-52s onto the radio in 1978 or 79?
Almost impossible, because back then they had these stations called Abrams stations.
And yeah.
You had to play real middle-of-the-road stuff to get on,
like, album-oriented rock stations.
Yeah, and it was like the Eagles and Linda Ronstadt and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had I wish I had kept it. They sent out a letter saying, if you want people who drive Mercedes to listen to your station, play this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. If you want people who drive Buicks and on down, if you want people who listen to your station who drive their friends' cars, borrow their friends' cars, play the B-52s, Talking Heads. So, you know.
Well, I worked at one of these album-oriented rock stations, and we played the B-52s, and we played the Talking Heads, and we played...
Oh, that's good. Well, some stations did, but it was mostly their college radio.
Yeah. Joe Jackson and Elvis Costello were just breaking through at the time. It was the new wave. And it was sharing the airwaves with Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd, and was kind of difficult. So how did you get stations to play it? I mean, in my case, I was working in a tiny station next to a drive-in that nobody paid any attention to in the industry. But how did you get other stations around the country to pay attention to
you? You had to beg them. Well, we just gave up after a while. A Mojo in Chicago went crazy for Mesopotamia, and he was really promoting that. And... what we didn't realize at the time, another band that had the same manager were coming out with something real funky. And so our manager, you know, he wanted them to be more successful or something. So I said, oh, do you really want to be on, you know, black radio? And I go, yeah, hello.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
We love soul music and everything like that. We have friends, African-American friends, you know.
Yep.
You know, he's a jerk, but. But when Love Shack came out, they didn't want to play that either, and the record company didn't get it either. They thought it was too weird.
Still became a hit, and is still being played today. In fact, it was on an episode of Glee this season.
Yeah.
It's been played in so many other places. In fact, I was going to introduce you as the guy whose music has been on Glee and Dancing with the Stars and in the movie Knocked Up and in the movie Rising Sun. And to my knowledge, Fred, you are the only guest I've ever talked to who has played himself on both The Simpsons and as the opening act for Cher.
Yes, and we were also on Guiding Light, and I played myself, and I was terrible.
You were terrible playing yourself?
I was terrible.
Did you ever do any acting where you played somebody else?
Well, I've been in a couple of movies.
Yeah.
I was in Doris Wishman, who was, I think she was called Queen of the Nudies. Her movies are just wild. She just passed away at the age of 92. She told everyone she was 72, but she was 92 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted me to play an Italian soda jerk. And I go, you know, Doris, I don't look Italian at
mm-hmm.
all.
Mm-hmm.
So I play the father of the girl who transforms from like a real ugly duckling into a really pretty woman. It's called Each Time I Kill.
Mm-hmm. And how was it for you to play somebody else instead of yourself? Were you better at
that? I was terrible. though people did say I was one of the better things in it, so that goes to show. Like, tells you about it. They couldn't release it because of some legal things or something. I don't know.
Wow. Well, you're in town here to perform with the Gateway Men's Chorus
yes.
this weekend. Two shows, Friday and Saturday night at the 560 Music Center at Wash U. Are you going to be singing your own songs or other songs? What's that
yes,
going to
be? I'll be singing four B-52 songs and one solo song.
Mm-hmm.
One solo from a solo album. Mm-hmm. And have 80 guys sing along with me.
How is that? You've already had rehearsals with them, right?
Well, I hope they drown me out. No, they're really good. I mean, it's really interesting. It works.
I'm curious, for a guy who has the rock and roll band background that you do, what it's like to work with a full chorus like that.
Well, we have a really good band, too, really rockin' band.
Uh-huh.
So that it works really well. We're doing Love Shack, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Planet Claire, and then two songs from Good Stuff, Dreamland and Hot Pants Explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And that was out of left field.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my band song, Monster.
Mm-hmm. So that, and then what will you do for the rest of the night? You're doing your five songs. Will you then sing the rest of the songs with the chorus? Will you
no,
become
no,
part
I'll,
of the chorus?
I'll be in the green room. No, I'll be watching.
When we talk about these songs of yours that have been used in these movies and the TV shows, did they have to come to you for permission each
yes.
time?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I know you get royalties from it, but did they have to say to you, okay, we want to use this, and you said, I don't really know.
We've turned down a few things, well, mostly fortunately. We even had, what's that, Rush Limbaugh started playing Good Stuff on a show, and it's like, get out of here.
And have you tried to stop that from happening?
Well, we stopped him.
Mm-hmm. Have there been times where there was something that you said no to, and then later on said, oh, that made a lot of money. We could have, that could have put some money in our pocket.
We would do it for, we do read like a, there was a violent video game that wanted to use something we said no to. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we're pretty politically correct or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I know that you have done a lot of fundraisers in your career, a lot of them for all sorts of charities, but particularly for AIDS organizations, because Ricky Wilson, who was the guitarist in the B-52s, died of AIDS in
yes.
85, 86,
86,
somewhere in there. Tell me about the personal connection that you've made through the years to these organizations.
Well, we've done benefits for HRC. We had our own big fundraiser in L.A. We just lend our support when we're able to, and they approach us, and we can do it.
Mm-hmm. Aside from Ricky, have you, especially in the 80s, that was the decade that AIDS was kind of devastating the gay community in America.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we lost a lot of friends.
Yeah.
From New York.
But particularly from the club scene there, the CBGBs.
Yeah.
So how long was it from the time you got in the station wagon and drove to New York and started playing these gigs between then and getting your first record contract?
We got our first record contract in 1979. We started our first jam where we did Killer Bees was November 1976.
Mm-hmm. And so it was 3 years later that you got a record deal?
More like two, not even two and a half.
Mm-hmm. And when the record company comes and finds you and hears you, I know how corporate America works. Was it a big corporate deal or was it like an indie label that found you?
Well, we recorded by a bunch of labels, and even if we didn't think we'd want to go is a nice, really nice meal for a change.
Any kind of freebie that comes along? Sure, you're starving musicians.
Yeah, we Richard Lloyd came down. I can't tell the whole story because it gets even crazier.
Mm-hmm.
But Richard Lloyd from television borrowed the station wagon, and we went out, and somehow he had driven it up part way, like 4 feet up a telephone pole without damaging the car.
Okay.
And, you know, it's just very interesting time. And went to dinner. And
today, that would be a YouTube clip and go viral.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah. So, but I'm curious. The main reason I mentioned the corporate part of this is I wonder if the record company was so corporate that they saw you guys and said, we love what you're doing. Now we want you to change it because it doesn't fit in with our image. Did you get any of that?
No, it was in our contract. I mean, there's no way they could change us. We wouldn't have signed anything if, like, we're going to, like, have to wear matching outfits and tap dance or something.
You know. They didn't try to say, okay.
No, they liked it. But the bad thing was they fired just about everybody who was really into us in the beginning.
At the record company?
Yeah, I think they always thought, even though we sold more than a lot of their acts, they always thought, this is not going to last somehow.
Oh, they looked at you as a novelty?
Yeah, I don't know what they thought. I mean, when we finally got the platinum records for Cosmic Thing, we had the record company president finally come to something, but then he had the housekeeper and the janitor be there to, as if, you know, they were part of the company,
mm-hmm.
to, you know, to congratulate us on getting, but we were happy to see somebody.
Anybody shows up and shakes your hand, you're more than happy to have that.
I was like, just give us the thing so we can go home.
Who came up with the look that you guys had on stage? Or was that just a matter of, this is what we wear normally?
Yeah, that's what we wore. The wigs got more elaborate. In the beginning, I liked it better when they had the ratty ones.
Mm-hmm.
But we only had enough money to go to thrift stores. And we liked a combination of 70s, 60s, 50s, whatever.
And then once you develop that look, this may be the wrong word to use, but then are you stuck with that for the next 25 years?
Well, I got boring for, what was it? I think it's Whammy or something. But then I just had suits made. I figure, have 5 suits, same style, different colors, and you don't have to think.
You just wear those, yeah.
But they look good. They were custom made.
So you guys hit it in New York and then got the record deal, and then you were around the same time that MTV was starting up, which was, what, 80, 81, something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, we were luckily we were before, so people had to come see us, had to buy our records.
But then
so we built up a following.
Right, but then you did videos.
And they wouldn't show them half the time.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you, because MTV was not a big part of the B-52's success story. Why not?
Who cares? That's 30 years ago.
No, but I mean, at the time, your record company was having you make videos, but MTV just refused to play them?
Well, no, they put us, 120 minutes at like 2 o'clock in the morning or something.
Mm-hmm.
So if people were watching, they're probably so stoned they don't know what they were watching.
Because some of the stuff you did was, you know, clever, bizarre, kind of like the entire B-52's icon.
Well, kids like it now. I mean,
yeah.
But I think the record company took them all off because I think they want to do a DVD. But getting Warner Brothers or Reprise to do anything, it's like pulling teeth.
It's such an odd career path that you guys have had. You know, it seems like you would run. They would run to you. Here you were, an extremely clever, interesting, and certainly visual band.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had our supporters, but I who knows how that works.
Yeah,
they had nice offices.
I mentioned in my introduction that the B-52s opened for Cher,
mm-hmm.
which I think was in 2004 or something, on one of her many farewell tours.
Yes, it was her 8th farewell tour.
8th of 20. What's it like being on tour with Cher?
Oh, we only did 2 shows.
Oh, you did?
And they were at the same place.
Oh, okay.
It was in Georgia. She was good, actually, because I like her. I like Cher from the 60s, and she sang some of that. And
mm-hmm.
She was good. She was really good, except she did this thing that I had seen before where you sound really natural, and you tell jokes and this and that, and you think, wow, she's pretty, you know, that's really great. And then the next night, the same jokes at the same place.
Uh-huh.
But she did sing. She didn't lip sync.
Uh-huh. But how about the diva thing? Was that in force yet in 2004?
No, she took a picture with us and all that stuff. She was very nice.
It's a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you.
After all these years of playing your music, it's a pleasure sitting down and
Well, thank you for playing. It's nice to meet a DJ who did.
Thank you. Fred Schneider here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.